This is the Pacifica National Board National Finance Committee meeting for May 28th, 2019. Having a quorum present, let's go ahead and take the roll.
Okay. Answer up when you hear your name. Sharon Adams?
Here.
Nick Arena?
Here.
Fred Blair?
Present.
Chris Corey?
Here.
Bill Crozier?
Here.
Lyndon Foley?
Here.
R. Paul Martin here. Mansoor Sabah? James Sackerton?
Here.
Nancy Sorden?
Nancy won't be able to attend tonight.
Ah, okay. Okay, we have eight, and that's a quorum.
Okay. So, the first thing up is approving the agenda. I'm sorry I was so late getting it out this week. It was, it's one of those weeks. Has anybody not received a copy of it? All right. Are there any additions or changes to the agenda that anyone would like to make?
Well, somebody should move it and then read it out. So.
Okay.
I move we accept the agenda.
This is Sharon. Right. I second it.
All right. So I'll read this out. So item one, convene meeting at 8:30 p.m. Item two, roll call. Item three, approve agenda. Item four, minutes approval, 5 minutes. Item five, report from executive director, 10 minutes. Six, discussion of flurry of reports from ED in the last day or two, mostly in the last day, I think. 20 minutes. That might not take that long. I read through them, and there wasn't quite as much there as I thought there was. Preliminary/continued consideration status reports for draft fiscal 19 budgets, KPFA, 10 minutes. Any other units that have information to present, another 10 minutes. Discussion of fiscal year 2020 timeline for the individual units, 20 minutes. Progress of spring on-air fundraisers, 30 minutes. And for any remaining time, we'll have new business at the end of the meeting. If that does not meet with anybody's approval, I would appreciate them speaking up now.
But the last item is to adjourn no later than 10:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Thank you. Any updates, suggestions, changes, or disapproval? All right. Hearing none, the agenda is approved. On to minutes approval. I believe I received those minutes about a week ago. This would be for the last meeting we held on May 14th. Are there any changes or objection to the previous meeting's minutes? All right.
Approve the minutes of the May 14th meeting.
All right.
Mansoor's here.
Hey, Mansoor.
Hello.
So other than approving the agenda and a motion to approve the minutes, nothing has been conducted so far. So you haven't missed much. I'm sorry.
I'm still trying to print the spreadsheets. It's not printing.
Okay. Good luck with that. Spreadsheet printing is messy business. All right. So I had a motion to approve the minutes. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the minutes from May 15th are approved. Next up is the report from the executive director, Maxie. You have the floor.
I'm sorry, I was muted.
Not a problem.
Yeah, I'm just getting off the track. I don't really have necessarily a report. I spent the last couple of weeks just trying to make good on some of the things that were requested of me for you all as a committee. I'll just go through those real quick and confirm that they were done. There was a request for information regarding the public media company, and the documents presented by public media company to myself and Nancy Sorden when she was chair of the board, and then subsequently what was discussed with Grace Aaron as she became the chair. So there were two separate documents that were forwarded to not only this committee, but just to this committee now I think about it, regarding that. I'll just reiterate the confidentiality of that information that was shared. But two documents, and Bill Crozier correctly noted that I had actually forwarded the second of the two documents first. My intention, as I spelled out in the subsequent email, was to give you the first document, which presented four options, and then after that, where they pared it down to the two that they thought were most formidable. There's no other update on that piece. I just wanted to make sure that everyone on this call has received that information, because I often worry about whether the email address I have for this committee includes everybody. So if you have not received it, either shoot me an email on the side or let the chair of this committee know, and I can make sure I provide that if it's necessary to come from me directly. The other thing is there was a request to have all the business managers provide current income statement and cash flow projections for the rest of fiscal year 2019. We had a due date for that on May 24th, which was obviously last week, Friday. Not every station made that deadline. The bulk of them did. I shouldn't say the bulk, half of them did. There was a misunderstanding, apparently, between KPFA and the instructions. So I'm still waiting on their material to be sent. PFW, same thing. Not that there was a miscommunication. They just hadn't gotten around to it. And WBAI, Bertel was on vacation during the entire period where the request and then the due date was provided, and he was unable to meet the deadline. But he did say, and I forwarded this in the email I sent with some of the submissions, that he would have that material by the 5th of June. So those are the two primary things that come to mind in terms of just updating the things that were requested of me for this committee in advance of this meeting today. The other thing that I guess I mentioned is part of my report, although I don't know if I really consider this a report so much as just an update. There was contact with the interim CFO regarding some of the requests, in particular Bill Crozier made, for additional material, stuff to complement what was submitted by the stations. And I think she gave a pretty thorough explanation as to the timeline that they're working with and the reason why they're not in a position at this time. She's not in position at this time, and neither is any TA to provide this committee or the board with what they're requesting. But they're not far off. Let me just read this real quick. She says, we are anticipating having a combined P&L for the June 11 meeting through February 2019. Our focus has been on gathering audit information for FY 17 and 18 and bringing P&O current for fiscal year 19. We have just completed recording national office cash and intercompany transactions from April 2018 through March 2019. In order to produce a meaningful cash flow, I will need to look at the full fiscal year's worth of cash activity for each entity, all seven units. This is something we have not had time to dive into yet, but we know that it is a concern and does need priority. Once we have met our deadlines for P&L information for the June 11 meeting, I will turn my focus to that. We will also anticipate catching up and being able to present more current financials each month as we go forward. And that's from Tamara Swiderski, our interim CFO. So that concludes my report.
Thank you, Maxie. We'll take questions from the floor if anybody has them. I have one
question. This is Nick Arena and the staff.
I'll go last. Go ahead, Nick.
So, Maxie, thank you for the update and report and also the efforts to get some additional information about the loan payment. I don't know if you're aware or not that WPFW hasn't had a dedicated business manager for over 3 years.
Yes.
And the WPFW has been paying at a rate of almost $1,300 a month directly to Pacifica for the support, accounting support, that's been provided by other Pacifica staff. So we don't have the ability to produce financial statements on our own. We rely on the assistance from the staff that we've been paying that amount to. When the request came for financial information, we did reach out to NETA to help us with financial statements. The response we got from NETA was that they would not be able to produce any financial statements until the end of May. So I kind of object to your comment. Actually, I do, that WPFW didn't get around to it. We have been paying for accounting support that we haven't received. And frankly, not getting around to it is not the reason why updated information wasn't provided. It's if we just haven't been getting that information to be able to share it with others.
I respect what you're saying. Let me clarify. The person that you're speaking of who was doing your financial management and accounting work is Barry out of KPFK in Los Angeles. It wasn't from the national office, but KPFK. And once we firmed up our agreement with NETA, we excused Barry from providing those services. Now, you know, I don't want to talk out of turn because I'm not 100% sure, but there have always been expressed, at least in the conference calls I've been on with NETA, some concerns with the accounting pilot procedures and financial management procedures conducted by Barry, not only for KPFK, but for BAI and PFW, because he was doing it for all three. So while I don't disagree with you that this was all of this was being handled outside of the office of WPFW, we put the request out for this information, and if Jerry Paris, the GM at PFW, wasn't able to do it on his own, then he could have certainly asked Barry to provide it for him up until the point that Barry concluded. Because what's happening now is NETA is going back and trying to reconcile information that has been provided to them from Barry in ways that, again, don't necessarily meet industry standard. It's, I hate to beat a dead horse, but it's a continuing narrative that for way too long, historically, Pacifica has operated with people who are not qualified for the roles that we have them in. And it causes quite a bit of chaos when it comes to the financial reconciliation and management and accounting procedure and practice and the reporting out that takes place with the organization. So, like I said, I don't want to beat a dead horse and go back to the whole institutional, structural, historical piece, but that's really, I think, coming to bear once again. And until NETA and its role and our ICFO and her role are able to get through all of the milieu and get to getting to numbers that they can trust and verify, we're going to have to be patient, because this is a task that I think even our auditors realize is a lot more
of a lift than anyone anticipated. So I do respect your clarification, and I appreciate it. But I just want to sort of give a more holistic understanding of it. But thank you for that.
Chris, would it be okay if I just said one more comment before we move on?
This is Lyndon Foley. I'd like to comment also.
Okay. Go ahead, Nick. It's all right.
Just so that you know, Maxie, you know, Barry was provided to us as a resource as a business manager by the former CFO, who's been out of his position, as we know, for some time. So, again, I do still object that that we had any ability to get any other information from Barry than what we've received. We simply haven't had the support, and your comments confirm the lack of capacity, perhaps on his part, either be a time or expertise on that. So, again, we've asked for many things, financial support, and we've been paying for that financial report. We just simply haven't received it. And again, we have asked NETA to provide that support, and they've said, as you said, that they're focused on finishing the audit work before they can give us any financial information. So I want to make that clarification, because it isn't because we haven't asked, it's just because we haven't gotten it because of the resources we have available.
That's fair. And let me add one element from the CFO. This is in response to a back and forth that happened earlier today between Jerry and I. Tamara Swiderski, the ICFO, says, Maxie, I spoke with Jerry and Annette this afternoon. I think Nick Arena might already have forwarded you this, but attached is the cash information I put together for him for April. We don't really have good numbers for the income statement for PFW and BAI right now, as we have not yet done an upload to Great Plains for current month's activity. From the attached, we can tell that they had expenses greater than income by about $30,000 in April. They are in pledge drive now until Friday, and they're with their goal at $350,000, and they're actual at $240,000 right now. They have approximately $70,000 in cash after funding this week's payroll. Let me know if there's anything else specific you need for the meeting. So I will forward this document. This came after I went to a meeting, and I'm just getting out of it. That's why I'm joining this call from a hotel room. a hotel lobby, I should say, instead of my home office. So I'll forward this to the committee, but I think this speaks well to what you just articulated. So thanks for the clarification. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Maxie. Bill, you're next.
Yeah, thanks. And I do appreciate this information and everything. We just do have to be careful, though, since this is a public call and it's streamed and it's archived, not to do a personnel evaluation or something like that. Certainly okay to talk about information we're requesting that we're not getting and talk about why. That's fine. I was just going to say, thanks for the information, Maxie. And I'd just like to stress that we still have not gotten anything from KPFT. The only information we got was what you sent us here through Tamara, and I appreciate getting that. The profit loss statement that we got, though, it only has for expenses, it just has the category totals, not the individual line item amounts. And so I hope that this next one we're going to get that you were talking about in a few weeks will be more detailed, because that would be very helpful. We're trying to update our budget, and without that, it's kind of hard to do anything else. And also just point out that the cash flow report that you sent, that we got from Nita, it appeared to just come from this current year's budget that was prepared last year. So it doesn't have any real numbers in it at all, the actual. So it's kind of misleading. So I was kind of ignoring that, but just want to make sure you're aware of that. And I don't know if that applied to the other stations, cash flow statements that we got today.
Well, the issue is, I hear you. It's one of the concerns NETA has expressed, and I've expressed almost from day one, and that is that there's not enough uniformity in the way that we handle the reporting of our financials. And so what one station is doing and thinks is enough isn't necessarily consistent with what another station is doing. And so, you know, one of the reasons we took on the contract with NETA was the hope and the promise that they'll create uniform policy and procedure and practice across the network. So that's part of their orientation work with the business managers, with the general managers. That's where we're headed, but that's a process, and we're not there yet.
Sorry, I was muted. Okay, so was that Ralph that wanted to interject?
No, it was Lyndon.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd just like to say that I'm a little shocked that the information we got just goes to February of 2019. I would really expect that April books would be closed. So, and that's the way standard, you know, operations operate. So are we going to be expecting our people? I mean, in Houston, I'm going to talk about KPFT in Houston. We have interim general manager and we have a business manager. They should be producing these reports on a monthly basis. I mean, you know, you close the books, you do this, you do that, you put out your statements. Obviously that hasn't been happening, but are we going, is that what we're going to be working towards is what I'd like to
yes.
know.
Yeah, it's a great question. That is where we're headed. It's been outlined not only by the former ICFO, but in our meetings with the business managers. The timing, the timeline, if you will, of reconciling and producing financial reports has to be made more current, and it hasn't been to this point. This is not new. Unfortunately, this has been going on for quite a while where business managers or persons in charge of the financials sometimes do it quarterly, sometimes do it semi-annually. It's all across the board. And so, again, our job with them, with NETA support, is to get them to recognize that kind of financial reporting has to be done on a much more timely basis. And so that's where we're headed.
Okay, Maxie, thanks.
James,
are there any
question?
Go ahead.
James, I have a question.
Go ahead, James.
Maxie, I was wondering, you just gave one example of what things that the stations are not doing the same. I wonder if you could give us others, and specifically if you could focus on WBAI, what's going on there?
Well, for me to do that, I probably need to go through old notes from some of the meetings that we've had to think of the things that aren't necessarily being done. What I can tell you is that there's different software being used at different stations. Some use Excel spreadsheets. Some are coming off of Memsys and other software that they integrate with their membership process. There are others that I can't remember the names of at the moment, but again, this lack of uniformity is an issue. We know that NETA has a certain system that it likes to use. What it's doing right now is ingesting into their system what the different formats at the different stations are, and also trying to convert the business managers to working in a uniform manner. So I don't know if I'm prepared to give the answer that you're looking for tonight, but I'll certainly make an effort to document some of those things moving forward, and perhaps can make that a part of my report next time we meet. I wish I could think of – there's just too many things in my head right now, and I'm not in probably the best position to come up with that answer right now.
Thank you. That would be helpful in the future. I appreciate that.
Okay, I'll write that down. Sure.
Anyone else? Okay, I just had one question, Maxie. I know that you've only received partial information on with the interim statements, but can you give any general perceptions about how things are going on the with the interims relative to the budgeted amounts?
Well, I haven't had a chance to look at all of them, so I'm probably not going to be able to do that. But what I can tell you is that we know uniformly across the board the fund drives have not been successful. some of the stations at 50%, others at 65%, and maybe 70%. Probably the only station that I think is optimistic that it will reach its goal is KPFA. With that said, we had some kind of, I would say, contradictory telling, if you will, of our financial situation by the former ICFO, who gave us the impression that the stations were bringing in more than they were spending, if I remember correctly, when he kind of gave a bit of a report. I think it was either, if it wasn't to this committee, it was definitely, I wish Nancy Sorden was on this call, it might have been to the national board. But I just remember there being a statement made that stations weren't spending more than they were bringing in, and that was a good thing, and that there was actually some optimism that at least in the first quarter of the year that we were in the plus side of things. I don't think that's the case right now. And I've heard a few stations indicate very clearly that they are operating from a deficit. So that's why there's entertainment of an additional drive. And I think one of our stations is even very aggressively looking at additional revenue streams to make up the difference. So there's a lot going on. I don't have a clear overview of what has been submitted because so much of it came in just the last couple of days. And, of course, with the holiday weekend, I didn't really spend a lot of time dealing with the material that came in, and I was also anticipating getting more from the other stations. So that's where we are with that.
All right, thanks.
Hello?
You got muted again.
This is Sharon. I have a question.
I think,
Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I think Chris got muted.
Chris, are you on mute?
Disconnected. He might have gotten disconnected.
No, he's still on the line.
Chris, we can't hear you.
He's now dropped off. I'm looking at Maestro.
Okay.
You'll have to call back.
Sharon,
in.
Why don't you go ahead?
Well, yeah, let me just ask my question. Maybe Chris is probably calling back in. Thank you. I was just curious when you said, Maxi, about other stations aggressively looking at other funds driving sources. What are they looking at? What are the other stations, and what are they looking at?
Well, I know KPFK has sent something to our attorneys regarding being able to generate revenue at the gate of a venue for an event, and how would that revenue be classified? So I know that's one. I think they're looking at multiple events in that way. I know that KPFK also has a gala coming up, and I think they're expecting to generate revenue through that gala. And I don't know if they budgeted for that in advance of the fiscal year or not, but I would have to imagine they did because I'm pretty sure they were confident about doing this event one way or the other. But so that those two are in play. I don't know of any others at the moment. That's the two things that come to mind right now. There are probably some others, but I'm just forgetting them at the moment. I apologize.
Okay. Just if I could just follow up a little bit. You know, I heard you say that you're having the attorneys check, but KPFA frequently does events, and we collect the money at the event. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, this is a little different. I understand what you're saying, because I've been to some of those events, and you're talking about whether they have, like, a speaker or something like that. I would imagine. At least I've been to one. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but what they're talking about in detail is literally a nightclub, and it's an audience that they're trying to attract, a younger demographic, and so they have some music programming on their station. Some of the DJs apparently perform at a certain venue, and what they're trying to do is find a way to partner with the venue to be able to generate revenue at the door, and so they sent that to our attorney to see, number one, if that was okay. And then it also was sent to our folks at NETA for consultation regarding how it should be classified and would it be a donation or something that could be aligned towards I forgot the other terminology that was used, but yeah, those are two of the things that come to mind. And I think, I know it was. The other one is, I think BAI is looking at some kind of cruise or tour, some kind of cruise thing, event, as a fundraiser potentially. So there are a couple of things out there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill for the stack again.
I was off the call for a second. I got dropped for some reason. But I'm assuming you're the only one on the stack right now, Bill. Go ahead.
I think so. I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah, I know KPFT has had a series of fund drives all coming in way under the goal this year, like in the range of 50 to 60% of the goal, at least on the amount that was budgeted. One of them, the goal was reduced, and we didn't even get close to the reduced goal, but compared to what was in the budget, you know, we're way below, and we just finished this last one, you know, last week, and it was like reached 52% of the goal, and we just can't survive like this. I was going to say also, I know a lot of our stations, including KVFT, have had a number of events where you charge admission, you know, for fundraisers, but they usually only raise a few thousand. The closest thing we had to a gala was about 3 or 4 years ago. We had a roast, and I think we netted about 10,000, but it was, you know, expenses were about 10,000 also. It was at a hotel, and it was nice, but it was, we have to figure out how to limit expenses because, or get underwriters to underwrite the expenses. Otherwise, we're going to be in big trouble if we have bad weather or something else that keeps people from coming. So just something to think about whenever we have,
yep,
you know, events that we expect to be fundraisers. I know we've had Pacifica, not KPFC, I don't think, but Pacifica has had some events that we expected to be fundraisers that were actually lost money, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars. So we have to be careful.
Yeah, if I can respond to that, I do think event-based revenue generation is a risky proposition. But I want to highlight something that occurred during our meeting last week with the program directors. I had a representative from the Radio Research Consortium attend that meeting and do a presentation on software that all the stations I'm requiring to take on, subscribe to, so that they can get an accurate understanding of their audience performance. This is part of the Arbitron, Nielsen data, PPM data, and it breaks it down in ways that allow us to really fundamentally understand what's happening hour to hour, day to day, on our stations. And there was one gross indication as to why our stations struggle, not only in audience, but in, I would argue, membership and revenue generation. And it's a simple notion of what's called time spent listening. And there was another one that I think is even more telling, and that is about what's called P1s, your primary listeners to your stations. So let me break them down real quick. P1 is the listener who prioritizes your station. Now, for a traditional public radio station, an NPR station, the average P1 for a station, in other words, the percentage of their listeners who consider their station the primary source, is usually between 50 and 65%. For the Pacifica stations, it is literally under 5%. So think about that. Only 5% of our listening audience considers us the primary source for their entertainment, news, information, culture, whatever you think you're presenting. 5%. Okay? That's the snapshot we were given. Now, the time spent listening is damning, too. Time spent listening for the average Pacifica station we looked at was 45 minutes a week per listener. Okay? What the researcher told us is because of the way we program with this patch quilt program scheduling, it is a, and I've said this before, we are reinventing ourselves every hour. And what's happening is we are not carrying listeners from 1 hour to the next. People don't listen to us as a station. They listen to our signals for specific shows. And we are doing all the things that cause low listenership and low fundraising. And so at some point, this organization, its stations, its program directors, from the top down, is going to have to come to Jesus, as they say, and recognize that some of the ways that we operate, many of the ways that we operate, don't cut it. And they are old, antiquated models that may have worked back in the 70s and 80s, but do not carry forward into this new media environment that we find ourselves in. So I say that to say that, you know, we can complain and moan about what's happening with our pledge drives, but we're doing it to ourselves. We can complain and moan about our audience and how low they are at different stations. We're doing it to ourselves. Until we adopt the best practices and proven approaches, researched and database driven approaches to radio station operations, we will continue a downward spiral until we're going to have to do some extreme measures to preserve any aspect of the Pacifica Foundation and its units. I'll leave it at that.
Our poll for Sam?
Lyndon Foley in the stack.
I'll put you on next, Lyndon.
Thank you.
Go ahead, our poll.
Oh, okay. Yes. What you've just said about, you know, the patchwork and we're, you know, the difficulty with following one thing after the other. Geez, I hope we didn't have to pay a lot to hear about that because we've known about it, discussed about it for quite a few years. The other thing is I'm glad that the station that's trying to do something with the gate and with the DJs is seeing the attorneys first. Because the major
yeah.
issue is not raising money. The major issue is avoiding plugola, which having
yeah.
your DJs work at something like that and making money off it and promoting it on the air, kind
mm-hmm.
of, you know, you better have an attorney look at that. So I'm glad the
yeah.
attorney's looking at that. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Let me just respond to the first thing you said. No, it was a free seminar to get that information. And yeah, it's true. This isn't the first time we've heard that. But as someone who has addressed this issue of programming at the station level, at the local station board level, at the national board level, there is resistance to change. And there is this steadfast holding to this notion that strip programming is a problem. And that we should be this amalgamation of individual shows by volunteers, regardless of quality, regardless of subject matter, just on the grid, as long as they have worked out the relationship with the program director and the station. And again, I think if we're going to succeed, we have to be intentional. We have to be well thought out. We have to be adherent to programming best practices. And so far, my 6 months, 7 months in this position, I've seen more resistance to that than I have an acceptance and a desire to move in that direction. I hope I'm wrong about that. But I'm going to keep plugging away at this notion that we've got to dramatically revise what we do at a local level. It does take investment. It does, more importantly, take us reorienting ourselves around what it means to provide public service in a local market. So, for another conversation. Go ahead, Lyndon.
Yes. I believe this is probably for this conversation. Maxie, I saw that an email you put out within the last couple of weeks, and they're been many going back and forth, but I saw that you said this and brought those two concepts, the time spent listening and the other, the less than 5 minute concept, whatever that one was. And our local, our interim general manager has also put in his report that he is working on transformational changes. Mm-hmm. And you sound like you're working on or thinking of transformational changes, but nobody's telling us what these transformational changes look like or what the end game is. And so I think we may as well just go ahead and get it out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well,
what station are you talking about?
KPFT.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Within the first, I think, 3 or 4 months of me taking this job, I had the benefit of touring all the stations and the archives. And in doing so, I met with the local station boards, the staff, and often the volunteer programmers. And I presented a very, I thought, thorough articulation of what the future program schedules, programming models, clocks, and all that would look like. So I'd be more than happy to share that information. It was a PowerPoint presentation customized to each market. And I'd be more than happy to share that. The good thing is that I plan to do another tour of all the stations, and I've announced this already, in the months of June and July. The antenna there is not so much to articulate my strategies or things that I'm proposing that we do. I'm actually looking at this as more of an ascertainment tour for me to learn more about the existing LSBs, the CABs, and find out how the work they're doing can be supported from the national office perspective. That's what that's really about. But again, I have on many occasions presented what I think are the forward-going models for how Pacifica stations should think about their program grids and how to modify and improve existing programming. I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater, but there are certain things that have been articulated that need to be incorporated if we're going to succeed, in my opinion. First and foremost, and I'll be brief about this, but you know, it's been articulated that our program directors need to put our volunteer programmers on contracts that require the programmers to adhere to policy provided to them by the program directors. I know there's some resistance to that notion. There's been contracts done in the past that weren't very effective. But I have experience putting contracts in play with volunteer programmers and meeting with them on a quarterly basis and making them feel more a part of a overall station than a single person who drops in and does a show for an hour and then leaves. And I think that relationship has to be built. The other thing is we talked about articulating clocks for every hour. The reason that's important is because it gives you a guiding post for how to host a public affairs show. But more importantly, it gives the station time on that clock to perform promotional business. We don't do underwriting, but it allows you to forward promote programming, which can help time spent listening. And so that's one thing that needs to happen. And right now we don't have that model in place. If I put a promo in rotation at a given station in Pacifica, there's a chance that the programmer, the volunteer programmer, may not play that promo when I've scheduled it because they just don't want to do it. And that is an accepted practice throughout our system. I've heard GMs and PDs tell me, even with the election promos, that the volunteers just wouldn't play them. And so that is a very real situation with Pacifica stations and the way that our model is working right now. We've also created a model for a national program. We obviously need to generate some revenue to put our position, the stations in a position to be able to fund or for us to be able to fund such a program. But that's something that's on the table. It's I think, pretty clearly articulated how it would be executed, and I think it's very doable. It's a low-res prototype, if you will, of a national radio program that would get us in that game right away. And then furthermore, there are some national syndicated programs that are within Pacifica's family and some that we would acquire that I think would also help us build audience and create strip programming that's much more reliable and consistent for the user. Those are just a few of the things that need to happen. There's a forward promotion strategy that can be implemented, very easily done. If we can just get those things in place, I think a lot that can move us to some degree in a forward motion. But there's some other work that requires much more heavy lifting. So that's where it starts.
Well, and that's what I'm more interested in is the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
I understand how, you know, rounding up or herding programmers is a problem. I understand that. I mean, we can't even get, you know, our paid employees to produce financials. So I can understand how, you know, getting programmers to do what you want could be a problem. I definitely understand that. But it's the transformational issues. That's what I want to, let's define it.
You're asking me to do that now?
No, but well, you probably could. I don't know. But, you know, when our IGM puts in his report that, you know, we're going to have transformational changes, but, you know, if I was going to do transformation, I would tell people what it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree with you. In a healthy environment, you would. In a healthy, robust environment, you would forecast changes that are going to be made. But we're at Pacifica, and what has happened when substantive change has happened is you've had anarchy, and you've had protest, and you've had, you know, some very divisive activity take place. And so I think there's I won't even call it healthy, but there's a real fear and probably distrust in sharing information, which is tragic. And I'm not speaking specifically to your station. I'm talking about words that have been articulated to me, not only in terms of the volunteer programmers, but in terms of the response they get from their local station board. So there's some healing that needs to be done across our network so that our professionals feel confident, that they can do their jobs, be judged empirically based on the performance of the station from a data perspective versus maybe having their heads roll because they did a decision that somebody on the board didn't like or that a programmer protested and got enough programmers to raise their fists and cause chaos. It's one of the reasons why I've articulated that we have to be very careful what we ask our community advisory boards to do. And it's also why I'm very clear that we have to be very careful about what the real role of the programming committee is. To me, programming committee should be about creating policy and ensuring certain reporting is done and ensuring that research is obtained. But when they start dibbling into trying to create programming and trying to define what programming is and should sound like, I think that's a problem. We've hired professionals to do this work. If we don't have the right ones, that's one thing. But if we've got professionals in our house, we need to lean on their expertise and allow them to do their jobs for the betterment of the organization. If their methods and their procedures aren't resulting in good things, then you get rid of them. You find ways to maybe move them or improve what they're doing. But what you don't do is infringe upon them from a board level or from a volunteer program level. It just doesn't make sense to have that mechanism in place and hold people accountable for it.
Hey, Maxie, if you don't mind me asking, what professionals are you referring to right now?
What I'm saying is if we've got professional program directors on our staff, then the local station board's programming committee should not be creating programming. They should not be dictating programming. That's not what their role is. The community advisory board should not be creating programming. They should not be dictating programming. That's not their role. The community advisory board is to advise how to maximize public service in the community, how to take advantage of research opportunities and ascertainment opportunities, and how to provide insight on how to connect with communities in a more fruitful, beneficial way. That's the optimal use of a community advisory board. When we talk about the local station boards and a programming committee, or if we talk about the national programming committee, it should be governance that says we want all the stations to uniformly get research. We want all of them to be able to produce program director reports to the LSBs on a monthly basis, giving us data on how the performance is going. We want them to be held accountable for this or that. I think those things make sense, but when we have local station board programming committees and national programming committees trying to create and dictate what programming looks like, I think that's a stretch, and I think that's an overreach on the part of our governance elements.
Okay, if that's true, then how does one implement, like, for example, a national programming slate at Pacifica? How can that happen? How can that be brought up?
I think what you do is you bank on your executive director working with the program directors to create that. Now you can mandate that the executive director make good on developing a national program. But I don't think you can legitimately, I shouldn't say that. Maybe it's legitimate for us to say that all stations are required to carry that national program. So you create a must-carry policy. That's one thing. But when we're talking about granular programming, when, you know, you have someone in the programming committee saying that every station should do every show as a podcast, that's an overreach to me. Now, if you want to create policy that says every station should have a policy and an approach towards improving digital and podcast programming, I think that's fine. And you can even articulate, you know, reports that speak to what are you doing to advance that. But to dictate that every show and every station be a podcast, that's an overreach. So it may be more nuanced than plain, but I think we have to be very, that's why I said at the very beginning, we have to be careful about what we're leaning on. Because I think what I've noticed at Pacifica is there's an unwillingness at times to appreciate expertise. There's a lot of bat talk. I can't hear it. But anyway, I think we have to honor and appreciate expertise where it is, and challenge it.
Bill,
but you know, let it do its thing. Okay. And hold people accountable.
Paul Verstack.
And Bill Verstack again.
Okay. Yeah, we're kind of out of time here, but I have a feeling that our next segment is going to be really short. So go ahead. We'll take two more. Go ahead. Was there somebody before Bill?
Or Paul, maybe?
Or Paul. Go ahead, or Paul.
Okay. I'll make it fast. First of all, regarding contract with producers, you can't have a real contract with the unpaid staff, as we like to be called, because there was a National Labor Relations Board ruling that that doesn't work. August 26, 1999, Pacifica, and particularly one now ex-general manager at BAI, managed to win their case at the NLRB and also screwed up some other people around the world who were trying to organize. So really, you can't have a contract with the unpaid staff. It would have, you know, I mean, you can call it that, but it's make-believe. So really, I mean, maybe call it something else or look at not using the word contract. I don't know.
Agreement.
The other part is I think you've had an example of some things that can happen because you came to a meeting at WBAI, which I didn't intend because I knew I didn't attend it because I knew it was going to happen at it, and you know, you can see how some of these things work out with people deciding they want to gang up on somebody, and you know, basically management allowed a hostile workplace environment for half an hour. You know, so yeah, there can be a lot of resistance and all of that, but also I think there needs to be some consideration of exactly what you want to do. What is the goal? Is there some reason to have radio stations and be doing this stuff in this day and age? So
there
are a lot of considerations, and yes, resistance will always happen.
Yeah. No, your point is well taken. I've had the pleasure of working at a lot of organizations in programming capacity. Never once did a board member tell me how to program. They may have asked me questions about decisions I've made. They may have certainly and have certainly asked me to provide reports to let them know how programming is doing. And all that makes perfect sense. But I've never had, a board suppress my professional capacity. That's just not the relationship that should be happening. In terms of the volunteer piece, I don't. I'll yield to your explanation about having a contract with volunteer. I agree. If it can be changed to another term, maybe it just needs to be an agreement. But it needs to be something that informs the volunteer that you cannot take your orders in terms of how to participate with your station from a board member, because that has happened. When I was in New York, there was a volunteer who specifically said, I don't take my orders from the program director. I deal with the board. That's a ridiculous concept. And the fact that that is even happening and someone felt entitled enough to even speak from that perspective is ridiculous. And so for us to create a culture that respects professionalism, that respects those who have the expertise and have been put in position to make programming decisions or business management decisions or development decisions or marketing decisions or whatever have you professionally, we've got to create a culture and an environment that respects expertise and experience and allows those people to be guided by strategic plan, operation objectives, and goals that are in stone, that can be obviously adjusted, but are written, that are accountable, that they can be measured against in a way that right now doesn't happen. Even I work right now without a strategic plan. No operational objectives, no goals. And yet I'm being reviewed. So think about that, okay? At the end of the day, we've got to ask, how do you review somebody? Whether it's a program director in Houston, a GM in D.C., how do you review them if you don't have a strategic plan, an operational objective, and goals for them to be guided by and measured against? And so I say all that to say that we've got to create the culture. And once we do that, I think pieces will start to fall in line. But right now, that hasn't been established. It hasn't been in this space for quite a while.
Thanks, James. Bill was next.
Yeah, and I'll try to be quick because I've already spoken. Some of this we probably should just talk about outside the meeting, but I would like to, if you could arrange for us to get the Nielsen information. I think one or two stations that they were shared with the board, but the rest of us haven't seen it. And I do worry from a financial standpoint, where this is the National Finance Committee, about KPFT has been making some changes, but some of the changes I think are making it worse. And we have to look at the data. I know you've been a proponent of that. And yeah, we have shows that are – I was looking at this last fund drive. There were 30 shows to my account that raised less than $100 per hour. About half of those raised zero. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them were late night, but not all of them. Some of them were in the afternoon or, early evening. And, we need to look at those and find out why and why those shows are still on, or what can we do something to help them. Because things that sound good in theory – we have to make sure that it's carried out in a way that actually helps the individual shows.
I would agree. To the defense of the program directors, they've been flying blind. Up until this last 6 months, the stations have not been required to have audience data. That's something I put in place to make sure that we had something measurable to review and analyze the performance of individual programs, the overall grids, and the stations as a whole. So that's new. The fact that we've been operating that way is ridiculous. It's some kind of notion that we could use some other modes of annotating audience in replace of PPM data, which is, I would argue, the most reliable thing we have available to us. I think only one of our stations has gotten enough data to cover an entire year. Most good analysis of audience data is year to year, seasonal to seasonal. So you're right, Bill. But I would also add is that I don't think you can judge the success of a programming purely on financials and what it generates in pledge drive. That's one measurement. It's an important one, but it is not the holistic understanding of whether a show adds value to your lineup. As someone who's programmed for over 20 years, I've had programs that were not great pledge drives material, but they did a hell of a job aggregating audience. A good case in point for Pacifica is Democracy Now. Right now, all of our stations complain, for the most part, other than maybe two, about their ability to raise funds around Democracy Now. Well, the truth of the matter is Democracy Now is the highest performing program on all of our stations. So it may not bring in dollars, but it certainly brings in audience. And so there's something else going on in the mix as to why we're successful or not with our program, because it, you know, it's not necessarily something you can evaluate based on did a show generate any fundraising money. That's not the way we can exclusively review and analyze the success of programming. So I asked for the data because I wanted us to be able to couple the finances, the financial fundraising, with actual audience numbers. But what's buried more deeply in understanding and analyzing the audience numbers is being able to look from hour to hour and see if one show builds audience in advance and carries it forward for the next. Now, I mentioned the need to create a programming promotion strategy. That's important here. But we noticed when we looked at the data, let's say in New York, the audience at 7 o'clock a.m. is less than half of what it is at 8 a.m. when Democracy Now! Comes on. The minute Democracy goes off, the audience returns to less than half and then craters from there. So people are coming specifically for that 1 hour. So the question then becomes, what can we build around Democracy Now! That will hold that audience longer? Because as the researcher told us, and I had recommended earlier when I went around and did my presentation, you have to create blocks of programming to hold audience. We are not, people don't listen to radio as appointment. It is a lifestyle driven medium, and we have to come to terms with that. That's how it operates now. So anyway, I feel like I'm wearing you out with all this programming data for a finance call, but I just think it's important to understand that perspective.